Full Circle. A few months after Debbie and I had finally ended our journey together, I became involved in a relationship which was not that serious. It lasted until December 2007. I had the most awesome time with Stephen over the Christmas period that December. I was able to take some time off, and so he flew up to Johannesburg to spend Christmas and New Year with me. It was just him and me. Brett had gone on holiday with Lauren after having completed his honours degree. It was an incredibly special time, and one which allowed me the opportunity to share with Stephen my spiritual beliefs and my value system. It was clear to me that it made sense to him, as he asked questions which showed his thinking and inquiring mind, a very clever mind at that. I believe that the seeds were sown for Stephen to begin his journey into this truly amazing and rewarding spiritual realm. On the work front, I was still travelling extensively and working hard. Alessandra and I had become very close. We shared very similar spiritual beliefs and views. Alessandro is 7 years younger than me, and strangely enough, our journeys and experiences are fairly similar. A lot of situations that he experienced since we met are identical to those that I'd previously experienced. This has created a strong bond of implicit trust, understanding, and respect between us. I still kept in contact with Gloria from time to time, and on New Year's Day we shared a few SMS messages. One of her messages prompted me to call her, as I was not sure what she was saying. She was living in Cape Town with her son Ken at the time. She was still struggling, something that I battled to understand. She was my spiritual catalyst, my first teacher before I outgrew her teachings. I believe that this was because of a combination of factors. She had gone backwards in the practice of her faith, so much so that I often scolded her for not practicing what she preached to me. On the other hand, I had grown significantly in mine. My faith was strong and uncompromising. In our subsequent telephonic discussion, she told me she felt that the time was right to share with me that her belief and understanding was that we were meant to be together. She had come back to Johannesburg. My view, which I shared with her at the time, was that we were together and always would be. She was a soulmate, my soulmate. No, she said, not like that. To make sure I understood what she was saying, I asked if she was telling me that we would be together as partners or lovers. Yes, she replied. This blew my mind, because I knew at the time that I loved her in the same way you love your sister or brother. But because I always believed what Gloria had said on the spiritual front, I did not immediately dismiss it. I explained to her very clearly how I felt, and also that I believed in what will be. She asked me to be open and to give her a chance. She needed a substantial amount of money to relocate, so I said I would transfer the funds to her account. She had already discussed the matter with her mom and had made arrangements for her and Ken to move in with her. The discussion ended with me in total confusion. What exactly was ahead of me and why? On Tuesday evening, the 15th of January, 2008, I had the opportunity to fly to Cape Town on business. In a way, I had engineered the trip, as it would allow me to meet up with Gloria and spend some time with her. I was due to fly to the UK on the Saturday night for a week of business in London and Manchester. I'd not seen Gloria for a long time. In fact, the last occasion was many months before, after her father had passed away and she'd come to Johannesburg for the funeral. I was nervous and apprehensive. My feelings were no different to those a few weeks earlier. I guess I just had to go with the flow and trust my instinct. It was great spending time with her, as I'd always enjoyed her very simple and relaxed space. Some time ago, I had come to the conclusion that I didn't really understand or know true love. Perhaps I was never to experience it, so I resigned myself to the fact that I was incredibly lucky to have someone like Gloria, who truly loved me. Perhaps this was as good as it got. She asked me to give her the opportunity to share her love with me, and in time I would learn to love her the same way. I went with the flow and it was fine, comfortable. I was prepared to give her the opportunity. I was thankful for it. I helped Gloria organize her move. I paid to have her car properly repaired for the trip back. I gave her all the financial support I could. She was due to leave Cape Town on Sunday, the 27th of January, 2008. On the second night I spent with Gloria, she suddenly burst into tears. It was out of the blue and caught me off guard. Eventually, I managed to get her to share her concerns with me. She said that I would soon come to a point where I would have to decide between her and another woman. This woman would be very successful, a very powerful woman, and I'd have to make a decision. I had already decided that I should give the relationship with Gloria a go. So now I hear this. Does this mean that I was being tempted with infidelity again? Oh, God, please give me a break. I thought I was done with this nonsense, was the first thought that crossed my mind. I understand karma now, so there's no need to test me. Why me, God? I said I had no idea what she was on about, and in a way I'm kind of pissed off that I'm always the last to know what I'm going to do, when I'm going to do it, and why I'm going to do it. This is not fair. This is my life, not too dissimilar to a pawn in a chess game with no control over the moves being made, or when it is appropriate to sacrifice me to the greater good. Heck, I want to be the king, because the worst that can happen is you resign or get checkmated. You never get sacrificed. Don't worry, she said, expanding further, that I was about to embark on my overseas trip, and by the fourth day I would know exactly what I felt. Feel about what? I responded. You'll know, was the extraordinarily helpful reply. I flew to London on the Saturday night. The only reason why I flew over the weekend was to spend the Sunday with Shayna and Brad. Every opportunity I got to see them, I took. It was great spending time with them. They had just moved into a brand new apartment together, and as always, they were very happy together, even after 5 or 6 years together. Alessandro arrived in London on the Monday morning, and we spent 2 days in London before we travelled to Manchester. I was due to spend 3 days there, and Alessandro only two. The fourth day of my trip was the Wednesday, the day I would know how I felt. All day I was waiting for the feeling, the epiphany, the answer, but nothing came. I did not feel any different towards Gloria than I had on New Year's Day. I loved her like a sister, nothing more. Then my inquiring mind began to analyze. Did she mean the fourth day of my trip, that is, including the Sunday, which was my personal time with Shayna, which would have meant today? Or did she mean the fourth day of my business trip, which would mean tomorrow? Given that I had experienced no revelation today, then it must mean the fourth day of my business trip. I looked forward to tomorrow, the day of discovery, the day of enlightenment. On the next day, Thursday the 24th of January, 2008, late in the afternoon, just before Alessandro was due to depart, my phone began ringing. We were part of a workshop in which I was actively involved, so it was not possible to answer. My phone was on silent, but I could see that the call originated from a South African mobile phone. I assumed that the caller would leave a message on my voicemail, but no, the phone started ringing again, the same number. No message this time either. A few minutes later, the phone rang again, same number. Fool, I thought. Clearly I'm not going to answer, so leave a message. No message. A little later, I received an SMS, which I assumed was from the voicemail services, but being the inquisitive individual that I am, I had to check. The SMS was from the same number. I had to read it. It must have been urgent. It read, "Hi, I wonder if you remember me. It's Irene Nivenhuysen. We were at Sir John Adamson together. I believe you are in London, but I need to speak to you quite urgently. Please, can you call me ASAP?" Blow me down with a feather. She'd broken my heart so long ago, and then wonders if I remember her from school. The only woman that ever broke my heart, and I have to try and remember who it was. As I was still in the workshop, I asked for indulgence from the participants and quickly sent her a message telling her I was in a workshop and would call her in an hour's time. As we were walking out, Alessandra asked me if anything was wrong, as it was unusual for me to stop a meeting to send an SMS. We were with our host, Martin. As we stepped into the elevator, I told them that I was gobsmacked, that I'd received an SMS from the only woman who'd ever dumped me, some 27 years ago, and she'd asked me to call her. They had a good chuckle. I was surprised, excited, but nonetheless intrigued. When the workshop ended, I was taken by taxi to the hotel. During the ride back, I called Irene. She sounded exactly the same as she did so many years ago. We exchanged very brief updates on what we'd done since we'd last seen each other, news on our children, what we were doing work-wise, etc. I did happen to mention that I'd taken a sabbatical for the last 2 years, and that during that time I had written a book. Remember, I mentioned earlier that I believed I'd completed it in late 2006. She seemed surprised and asked what it was about. My response was that it was autobiographical, but spiritual in its context and message. She told me she was a very spiritual person, with a particular gift for healing. She told me that she'd been spiritual from a young age, that even in primary school she'd received communication and messages. I was amazed. I never knew that. Even when we were high school sweethearts, she'd never said anything about it. She now lived in KwaZulu-Natal, but sometimes travelled to Johannesburg for business. She told me she was currently in Johannesburg and believed I'd be back in South Africa over the weekend and would like to see me. She'd planned to fly back to Durban on Sunday morning. She didn't say why she wanted to meet me, nor did I ask. "No problem. We can meet for dinner on Saturday night," I said. She wanted to know what time and where. But I hadn't thought that far ahead. Minor detail could be sorted out when I was back. She didn't seem too pleased with that. We had to end the chat as I had arrived at the hotel. I said I'd call her later. I did, and we exchanged more news. She said she'd been married 3 times, which made me feel okay about my record of 2 failed marriages. It's not often that I meet anyone who has failed in marriage more than me. So on those very rare occasions, I allow myself a certain smugness. I know it's a sign of weakness, but fortunately the odds allowed me to rarely expose this. We exchanged a number of SMS messages that evening before I went out to dinner with our hosts. Later that night, after much thought trying to understand this weird scenario, I sent her an SMS asking what had made her contact me after 27 years. Her response was, "My intuition, I just had to." I then asked her for how long she'd had this intuition. 1 week, love. I responded by saying something to the effect that it scared me. "Don't be. A bond can never be broken. Trust the universe." Another kiss. In that instant, I realized that on the 4th day of my business trip, I knew how I felt. I had no idea what the purpose of this new development was, but I knew that I could not commit to Gloria in the way she needed, in the way she deserved. I had my answer. The next day, I flew back to London. The flight from Manchester was delayed for 3 hours, which reduced the chances of me making my connecting flight from London to Johannesburg that evening. I decided to send an SMS to Irene to advise her of this possibility, to which she replied, "No problem. I'll delay my flight to see you if I have to." What exactly was so important that she had to see me? Was it good news or bad news? I guess I'd just have to wait to find out. Fortunately, I just made it in time. My suitcase was the first off the baggage claim. I sprinted to the connecting terminal at Heathrow. A long sprint, but I was motivated to make it. I arrived in Johannesburg early the next morning. I cannot sleep on an aeroplane, not even when flying business or first class. I didn't have to worry about squandering money or a business class bed. I just didn't sleep. Our project was being funded by seed capital, so we couldn't afford such luxuries anyway. When I got home, I decided to have a shave. For me, that meant two shaves, face and head. I wanted to be at my shiny best when I met my heartbreaker. I decided to call her and put her out of her misery. She didn't have to wait until that evening to see me. I offered to see her in the next 2 hours if that suited her. I decided that I was incredibly kind to indulge her when she'd so callously broken my heart 27 years ago. Yeah, sure. Who are you kidding? I drove to the house she uses in Johannesburg. As I drove up and saw her, it was like a flashback to 27 years before. I instantly remembered why I'd been so madly in love with her. She looked different, but the same. We embraced and my heart was racing. Oh, boy, whoa. What if she has bad news? I thought. So I played it cool. Simmered at 90 degrees instead of boiling at 120. It's called control. We went inside and started talking. I asked her why she had contacted me. What was the reason? In summary, her story was that a few days before in Durban, she'd been told to contact me. Now, at the risk of digressing, Irene is a very spiritual person, a very humble and obedient servant of God. She is blessed to receive her communication in an oral form, where us lesser mortals have to trust our gut, our instinct, our intuition to hear and interpret messages. She gets it from a loudhailer in words spoken to her. How cool is that? It's hard to screw up interpretation or understanding if you are literally told what to do. Not even I could fail on that basis. It's not that I'm jealous about her gift. Okay, right, I am a bit. But I've learned to live with it. When Irene initially received her instruction in KwaZulu-Natal, she flew to Johannesburg. On the plane, the same message was confirmed to her. So she was told to contact an old friend, an author, a male from her past, and that she should go and do it now. Being the obedient servant that she is, she set about this immediately. She didn't know why, but she never questions and always does what she's told. Parenthood would be much simpler if we always got that right with our children. She had kept in touch with most of her old school friends and exes, so she knew it wasn't any of them. But for some reason, my face was prominent in her mind. She met up with her cousin Barbara and her son Brent and started the search. Brent searched on the internet and Barbara looked up all the Rices in the local telephone directory. She then received a call from an ex whom she'd not heard from for many years, someone that she'd hoped she'd never hear from again. But she correctly decided that he wasn't the target, but was just some loose shrapnel flying around. Irene dialed the first Rice, but no answer. She didn't recognize the second name, so ignored it. She dialed a third one, and my son Brett answered. He was at home studying for his honors degree. She explained that she was looking for an old friend, Kevin, who had a sister, Linda. Brett said she was looking for his dad and aunt, and told her that I was in London on business and would be back on Saturday morning. He gave Irene my mobile number, which is when she started calling me. After the third unanswered call, she called Brett again to ask if there were any time zone differences, as I was not answering it. He suggested that I might be in meetings. It was best to send me an SMS. That's my boy, sharp. What confirmed everything for Irene was when I told her I'd written a book. At least I believed I'd completed my book at that time, so I guess it was reasonable for her to conclude that I was an author. Not quite on the bestseller list, as I hadn't published anything, but nonetheless an author. When I told her I was spiritual as well, it was bingo. Game over. At the time, however, I was unaware I was playing or was being played. Perhaps the chess analogy is worth mentioning again. We spent hours talking, sharing our views and beliefs, which are identical, one and the same. The chemistry was still there. It had never gone. We went out for dinner that night. We spent the next day together. I discovered that Irene had endured a very similar journey to mine, similar challenges, similar lessons. She had struggled financially after the end of her first marriage. She had nothing, no financial support, and had battled to make ends meet, struggling to feed and clothe the children. She'd worked hard, had two jobs to hold down, but persevered. She got involved in property, reality, and started to do really well. She worked extremely hard and eventually started to make good money. She moved from property sales to property development, and today she is an independently wealthy woman. She's extremely humble and believes that all she has achieved are gifts from God. She shared stories of divine interventions and guidance for property developments that at the time nobody would have taken on. She was told what to do and obediently followed the instructions. The results were her rewards, her gifts from God. Gloria was right with both of her predictions. On the fourth day of my business trip, I did know how I felt. It was also the very same day that Irene contacted me, the 24th of January, 2008. I would have to choose between her and a very successful and powerful woman. Irene is both financially successful and spiritually powerful. Irene and I were together again 27 years later. For what purpose, though? I needed to know the reason, and soon. She delayed her flight from Sunday until the Monday, the same Monday that Gloria was arriving in Johannesburg to be with me. I lay awake on Sunday night and prayed to God for answers for my question of what Irene and my purpose was together. I asked for a very specific answer, a clear and unambiguous answer. I also asked God to confirm to me that Irene and I were meant to be together as a couple. For this, I asked God for a clear message of confirmation. In fact, I told God that confirmation of this would happen on Monday morning when Irene told me that she loved me. I did not feel bad about demanding an answer. God knew my intentions were pure, and I had the pressing issue of Gloria's arrival to deal with. I wondered how I always managed to get myself into these awkward situations. The first answer that comes to mind was stupidity. But surely I can't be that stupid. Maybe I'm just a soft touch with a good and caring heart, but probably it's a strong combination of both. Very early on Monday morning, I went for a run with a friend. When I got home, I saw that I had received an SMS from Irene sent at 5:41. Now I know. I am your gateway and you are my gateway. To walk together, in, through, and follow the spiritual road together. To lead others to an awakening. To get to and to walk through the gate of the third dimension of body, soul, and spirit, and be one with God. Early that morning, Irene had been meditating and praying for the same answer that I was seeking. She received it and sent me the SMS. I immediately understood that our purpose was to be together to do spiritual work. I had known for some time now that the second part of my journey was to help humanity in some way. I called her and we had a brief chat to try and understand what the message specifically meant. That is, how exactly were we going to go about this? Neither of us had any understanding of the way forward, but we agreed we had to be patient. I still wasn't sure whether together meant as spiritual partners only or as true partners spiritually and physically. I had already prayed for my answer the previous night and dictated the format I wished to receive it in. So I waited. At 6:58, Irene sent me this SMS. Being true to yourself is being true to others. Love yourself and know I love you. I was blown away. I got down on my knees and thanked God for giving me the answer. I now knew exactly what I had to do. Irene flew back to Durban later that morning. The previous day I had, at her request, given her a copy of what I believed to be my completed manuscript, this book. We kept in constant contact via SMS and telephonically. We were like young kids in love again. It was an awesome feeling. Gloria arrived safely at her mom's house on the Monday evening, but we agreed we would get together the next day. She sensed that something was not right. She was always very perceptive. I arranged to take her to dinner the following evening. I prayed for guidance and wisdom to say and do the right things. I felt terrible bringing her to Gloria, but I was comfortable that I had never led her on. I'd kept telling her that I wasn't sure we were meant to be together, but I was prepared to give her the opportunity to love me, and hopefully I would learn to love her in the same way. Unfortunately, she would not have that opportunity. I told her that it wasn't meant to be, that I did not love her in that way, that it would not be fair to her. I couldn't tell her about Irene at that time. It just, well, it didn't feel right. If she knew it or guessed it, she never let on. She accepted it with grace and dignity. She's a very special woman. On the Wednesday night, Irene sent me an SMS, actually many, but in this particular one, she said she remembered our very first dance at a party at my house. I think for my sister's birthday. Irene was about 14 and I was 15. While we were dancing, I kissed her. For her, it was her first kiss ever. She said in her SMS that she thinks the song had something to do with sailing, but she couldn't remember who sang it. When I read the SMS, I immediately remembered it was Sailing by Rod Stewart. I sent her an SMS to tell her, but she'd switched off her phone as she was going to sleep. The next day, I looked up the lyrics. Sailing. I am sailing, I am sailing, home again across the sea. I am sailing stormy waters, to be near you, to be free. I am flying, like a bird across the sky. I am flying, passing high clouds, to be with you, to be free. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Through the dark night, far away. I am dying, forever trying, to be with you. Who can say? Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Through the dark night, far away. I am dying, forever trying, to be with you. Who can say? We are sailing, home again across the sea. We are sailing stormy waters, to be near you, to be free. O Lord, to be near you, to be free. O Lord, to be near you, to be free. O Lord. The lyrics gave me the cold shivers and tears at the same time. The words are so appropriate to our journeys. We were together. We became separated. We endured difficult times, stormy waters. Our souls kept on calling out to each other. Can you hear me, even though you are far away? Finally, we are sailing. We are together again, to be near you. O Lord, to be free, to do God's work together. It was for us another powerful confirmation of us being together and why. On Thursday night, I flew down to Durban to spend the weekend with Irene. She has an amazing house on a golf estate on the north coast of KwaZulu-Natal. Her home has an amazing serenity about it. It is a spiritual haven. I had managed to buy a DVD of Rod Stewart performing Sailing live in concert, and that evening we played it and danced to it and kissed, just like we had so many years before. Like me, Irene has been involved in many relationships, mostly difficult ones. As I said to her that evening, my first kiss must have been great, as it ruined you for life. You had to go and kiss many frogs to realize that I was your prince. I was not comfortable calling Irene by her first name. Everyone does. I decided to call her Angel, because as you will discover, she is an angel. She is my angel. She's everyone's angel. We spent a lot of time together, learning more about each other and our journeys. She had finished reading my book and gave many different examples of the similarities in our lives, like we had lived parallel lives. Her behavior, idiosyncrasies, likes and dislikes are identical to mine. It's like being with another me, a much prettier one, though. I told her that there was absolutely no doubt that, just as we get twins in human form, we get twin souls in spiritual form, and that she was my twin soul. Everything I had ever asked God for in a partner was given to me. I had been very specific in my request about the many attributes I expected, and Irene was all of them and more. But, as I've said before, God has a sense of humour. My biggest dislike is smoking. However, I did not specifically state to God that my ideal partner would be a non-smoker. Heck! He would have known that, so God just had to show off his sense of humour and give me a chain smoker. Equally, everything Irene had ever asked God for in a partner, she now found in me. However, she does not like alcohol or drinking, something she also failed to state to God, and I do plenty of that. God also showed Irene his sense of humour. God is fair, don't you think? I thought much about why we'd only reconnected 27 years later. Why did we not stay together and get married way back then? I believe it was because we had to have that initial connection to allow us to recognize it immediately so many years later. We had to travel our own journeys to learn our lessons and pay our karma, and only when we had completed these were we to be reunited to pursue God's purpose for us together. The following week, Irene asked me to go and see Lillian, a clairvoyant friend of hers. Irene had known her for some time, and Lillian knew and understood the many challenges and difficulties that Irene had endured. I said I would do so, but on condition that Irene did not tell Lillian anything about me. Our relationship was only a week old anyway, so Lillian wasn't even aware of it. I called and made an appointment, giving only my first name. My appointment was set for the 7th of February, 2008, exactly 2 weeks from the day that Irene had made contact with me. Lillian is an Egyptian whose primary method of sharing information is to read the remnants of the coffee grounds from a cup that you have drunk from. The coffee she uses is black and very strong, but reasonably sweet in taste. The following is a summary of what happened, but I have only highlighted the more important aspects. I'd like to stress that I never gave her any information while she was sharing her reading with me. I mostly kept quiet, either agreeing or disagreeing. After I'd drunk most of the coffee, she turned the cup over, face down, onto the saucer. She then tried to separate the cup from the saucer, but found it difficult to do so. She smiled at me and said, "This is a sign of new love, less than 2 weeks old. You feel like a 16-year-old again." In point form, this is what she said. 1. I had been married twice. Each marriage had lasted about 7 years. 2. Neither marriage was happy. 3. I had 4 children, 2 from each marriage. 4. From my first marriage, one of the children is living with me, one was overseas. That I'd had a brief affair during the first marriage. That I'd left my wife to marry another woman. I recently saw my child overseas. 5. Relating to me, very clever, very generous, with a good heart. I have been fair to all my exes, girlfriends included, which is why God blesses me financially. I am very powerful inside. I need to or must communicate to lots of people. She asked if I had any hobbies, such as art or painting. She was trying to identify what it was that I could do to communicate to people. She did not know about my book, which at the time I thought was finished. And I had met my soulmate before my first marriage, and she would come into my life now, if not in it already. The new love she spoke about. She said our lives had come together, and she showed me the most unbelievable picture created by the coffee remains, a very clear picture of a heart. She said we would have a great future and lots of happiness together. During this time, I had not said a word. She simply read the cup and spoke. I was amazed because everything she said was accurate, exactly what it was or is. I then told her about my book, and she got excited because she hadn't been able to identify the medium from which I needed to communicate. She looked at the cup again and said, "I see another 2 books. That was not what I wanted to hear. I'd never had any aspiration to write a book, never. In January 2006, I just knew I had to write. Why, I did not know. It was extremely difficult and sometimes painful to write this book. So another two books? After the reading, she asked if I had any specific questions. My response was no, but I felt I should share with her how accurate her reading was, so I quickly went through the aspects. At the end, I acknowledged that I had met my soulmate before I'd got married, the first time. And yes, I fell in love again less than 2 weeks before, and yes, I was with my soulmate. That's wonderful, she said. You know her. It's Irene. With that, she burst into tears. I didn't know what to do, how to comfort her across the table, but she said it was all right. She was just so happy for Irene. She had travelled a long road with Irene, so she knew the issues that Irene had had to deal with. She also knew what a wonderful, loving, caring, and generous soul Irene is, and just how much Irene deserved love and happiness. As much as I had been amazed by my astrological reading done by Lawrence a few years ago, so too I was about Lillian's reading of my coffee cup. I had also had occasion to have my palm read a year or two prior to this reading, and Clive, the palm reader, told me the exact same things about my life, my personality, my experiences, and my being at the time. I subsequently saw two other psychic readers who were also spot on. I've had five different forms of readings from five unrelated people. How is it that they were all so accurate? I got to meet Irene's two sons, Brent and Kyle. It was mind-blowing for me, as they are identical in their personalities and behaviour to my two eldest, Brett and Shayna. Brent was born about a year before Brett, followed by Kyle and Shayna. Brent is a very mature, responsible, dependable young man who shuns nightlife and similar activities. Shayna is identical to him, so much so that when she met him in March 2008, she actually said to Brent that he should have been her brother, not Brett. On the other side of the scale, you have Brett and Kyle, who are both designer label freaks, image conscious, have to be seen at the right places, in the right car, with the right clothing. They're two peas in a pod. Freaky. It was so easy adapting to Brent and Kyle. I dealt with them in the same way as I do Brett and Shayna. I have developed a fantastic relationship with both of them. There's no doubt that we all enjoy each other's space. Likewise, for Irene, my children absolutely adore her. Stephen took to Irene from the very first day. He never speaks openly to anyone, yet there he was, my 14-year-old, going on 20, teenager, quietly sharing lots of personal stuff with her shortly after they met each other. I just stood back, watching with my mouth open, wondering how this was happening. Stephen and Jamie compete for her love and attention, so much so that I can't even get near her. I often tease them by telling them that Irene is my girl and they should get their own. All the kids like each other and get on well together. We are literally and figuratively one big happy family. Irene and I have six kids together, not four and two respectively, but six together. One of the most rewarding lessons I have learned from being with Irene is to have learned about true love. To be with a person you trust so implicitly and deeply, to be with someone who loves you so much that you feel that love, that warmth all the time. I thought I would never know true love, but I do now. I've also learned how to love unconditionally. I thought I had learned it previously, but armed with my current understanding, I know I have only learned it since being with Irene. I also learned to use what we believe to be God's true name and Jesus' true name in our prayers and communication. I want to stress that, as I have detailed in the chapter entitled A Summary of My Spiritual Beliefs and Understandings, it doesn't matter what name you choose to use. In Hebrew, the true name of God is YHWH, pronounced Yahweh, and the true name of Jesus is YHSWH, pronounced Yahshua. What we've also learned to do together is to pray aloud. something neither of us had ever done before. One day I will lead the prayer, and the next day Irene will. We try our best to do this together every single day. Our prayer generally follows a very similar pattern, but is adapted to suit any particular need, issue, or concern that we have in our lives needing guidance on or would like to pray for on someone else's behalf. An example of our prayers is provided at the end of the chapter entitled, My Angels' Prayers.